Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. I'm Greg Hahn, President of Winthrop Capital Management. Welcome. With me today in the studio here is Amy Anderson, Production Coordinator. Hi, Amy.
Good morning.
Good morning. Off a long weekend. And Adam Koons, the man, the myth, the legend.
Good morning.
Head of trading and works with me on portfolios here at Winthrop Capital Management. Wow. Okay. So summer is upon us. So we've got the summer reading list. We need to get that summer reading list. Have you picked out your book for the summer yet?
I've got a few.
I looked at the stack of books I have and opted for Calvin and Hobbes. It's kind of the mood that I'm in right now. It's like, oh my God, yeah. this has just been an intense year and an intense last year. So I need some release that just gets me, just makes me smile.
Yep.
But I got a long list of books. And so we'll work to get that out this next week. But today we're going to talk about some stocks for the second half of the year. But let's build a context, Adam, for what we're seeing in the market right now. And the base thesis for where we are from an investment standpoint is the belief that the vaccine will ultimately be effective in controlling the spread of the coronavirus, which will allow the economy to reopen, which will allow the Fed to ease off the gas pedal on the aggressive monetary policies that it's seen. So I think that just from a base case, it's playing out. However, the labor report last week looked like a blip. I actually don't think it was. But it came in worse than what was expected. There's some structural issues that are taking place right now, including the extended unemployment benefits.
Right.
The structural issues with getting jobs posted and getting people back into jobs is the real issue. But it's probably best illustrated in this whole services sector, where you've got the hospitality, travel, leisure, conferences, entertainment, all of that opening up at one time, and we're in the second inning of that all opening up.
Right.
So we're still early, all trying to grab the same labor pool and the labor pool is incentivized to sit home because the extended employment benefits in several states are still exist, and they're just not ready to go back to work.
Yeah.
So 2 million jobs being posted, and there's 8 million people that are unemployed right now or sitting out of the workplace.
Right.
So right now it's just the structural issue. That's just dislocation. Okay. With that though, we've got the Fed monetary policy that we're expecting the Fed to start to talk about starting to slowly pull out of its aggressive monetary policy. M2 is up 30% year over year. The amount of money that's been flooding into this system has been very, very aggressive. And on the heels of this, we got Biden talking about an infrastructure package, so more fiscal stimulus coming. Our belief is this is supporting asset prices. So valuations, we're going to talk about this when we get into some of these stocks. Valuations are really, really extended in some of these sectors. So even sectors where we think, hey, this could be an opportunity. The rally is already taking place. Like in travel, when you look at bookings as an example,
right.
As a stock, it's already back to pre-COVID levels. It's been there for a while now. So, so any thoughts that you have on where we are from an investment standpoint, and just in the publicly traded sectors?
Well, back on the jobs, yeah. I think if you think that we're not going to have some blips here and there, then you know you're just not viewing a recovery the right way. It's not going to be a straight line, but the S&P 500 is showing otherwise. I mean, it was up again last week, about 0.5%. So it's kind of hovering at all-time highs. The Dow is at all-time highs. The Dow is up 13.5% this year. So overall, equity markets here in the U.S. and Europe are up significantly.
But is the Treasury market priced for a Federal Reserve getting prepped to raise interest rates?
No. And so last week, the announcement out of the Fed was that they're going to unwind their corporate portfolio, which, granted, is an extremely small piece of the overall portfolio.
Yeah, it's like $8 billion.
$8 billion in ETFs, and then the other $5 billion is actual bonds. So we're going to start by unwinding the ETFs, but I mean, relative to the market of...
It's tiny.
It's nothing. But yeah, it showed that would be the first thing that they need to unwind before they begin to take their foot off the gas pedal, as you're saying. So yeah, the bottom line is no. I mean, the 10-year's at 155, and so we've come off the highs of 170, but if you look at the last time, you know, the Fed began to ease back on their quantitative easing program back in 2018, 10-year was at a 325.
Yeah.
So there's significant move to run.
And the 2 years at what, it's less than 20 bips.
Yeah.
So the whole push, and I think the footprint for this or the pathway has been laid after the financial crisis when they started to raise interest rates. They did it very, very slowly.
Right.
And did it over a 2 year period of time. Very predictable rises in interest rates. And I think that's what we're going to see is it's going to put pressure. We'll see pressure on the short end eventually. But I agree with you. I don't think the bond market is pricing in any form of change in the Federal Reserve policy. And they're going to start talking about it. They may not implement it in 2022, but second half of the year, we're going to start to hear the Fed start to a bigger narrative around reducing stimulus. So
yeah, I agree with that.
With that, I think the real challenge then is what does that do with equity prices?
Yeah. I mean, especially your more growth-oriented stocks are going to suffer more in a rising interest rate environment. They're considered a longer duration asset where the valuation is basically based off of cash flows 10 years out versus your more dividend paying that you're getting cash flow right now. So a lot of those are your tech, you know, smaller tech that are growing at a fast pace but may not be profitable today. So that'll put significant strain on equity valuations. Yeah.
So if you could pay to go up in space, would you go into space?
I would.
Jeff Bezos says he's going to go with his brother, going to take the first space ride. I don't think I could do that.
No.
But I think that's going to put some pressure on the Amazon stock.
Probably, yeah.
And the other thing, before we get into stocks, one of the stocks that we're not going to highlight is Apple. So Apple has its developer conference on the heels of its most recent iPhone release. It's been the darling of the equity market for the last several years, but has so far year to date really underperformed.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of front ran their revenue growth in 2021. The stock was up almost 100% in 2020. So I think really what you're seeing here is the same. It's a valuation story. As a lot of these stocks are just overshot their target.
Well, and this battle with Epic. So it's also it's also what happens to what's a fair deal for the app developers on the platform. And apparently 30% is just not is too high. So so I think that's part of what is expected to come out of this developer conference is some kind of way forward and what working with the developer community looks like and what the App Store platform what it looks like going forward if there are any changes to it. So something to watch there. All right, let's start digging into stocks. Let's kick it off. What do you got?
So I'm going to start at the top, Microsoft. This is our largest holding across our large cap blend and our focus growth. I don't think there's any surprise here. This is just a company that just continues to fire on all cylinders. Revenue growth in pretty much all growth segments is double digit. Their Azure, which is essentially their cloud business, up 50% in the second quarter, so outpacing Amazon Web Services by over 10%. So when you look at all that, we're talking about revenue growth over the next 10 years of 15%, which would put revenue at a whopping $215 billion per year. Margins continue to expand a little bit as the product mix kind of shifts towards better margin businesses. So I'm modeling out 35% on the margin side. So when you factor all that in, we're looking at a valuation of 25 times earnings and 10 times sales, which, you know, is a little bit on the high side. But overall, given the growth story here, I think that this still is an attractive company.
I saw that one of their new products coming out is you'll be able to video yourself giving a speech, and then it can be translated with your voice into any language. It was amazing to watch. So one of the issues that happened last week was Biden added additional names to the blacklist of Chinese companies that are doing business with Chinese military. And so they've got 1 year to basically disinvest from the U.S., including out of our ETFs. And that's weighed on Chinese stocks. But Tencent is one of the holdings. Do you want to?
Yes. I mean, one of my favorites. And a big reason it's a favorite is because of how many different businesses they're involved in. I mean, in some ways, they're like a publicly traded private equity firm. And a lot of their businesses have, you know, substantial monetization that hasn't been taken advantage of yet. But they're in gaming, they're in financial technology, communications, media. I mean, pretty much you name it, they're involved in it. One of their biggest growth drivers is WeChat, which has 1.2 billion users, which is just hard to even put your head around. But they really haven't moved towards monetization of that 1.2 billion the way that Facebook and some other social media outlets have. And so there's significant runway there. Revenue growth continues to be in the 20% area, and we think that's going to go, you know, continue to go forward. Stocks trading just under 80, which is actually 20% off of its all-time high. So from a valuation standpoint, this looks fairly attractive right now.
I love their gaming business, and there's also a gambling piece of the game.
Correct,
business. Yeah.
And one of the advantages they have is that they're not in the banking system like Alibaba and Alipay are, so while there is increased regulation, we think at the end of the day they're not going to be as impacted as others.
So is Alphabet a monopoly?
Absolutely. I don't know how you could say they're not.
So one of the top five stops is Google,
right?
Alphabet,
yeah.
But they're around the world and led by Europe. There are these antitrust, and there's here in the United States antitrust lawsuits, and they have been able to settle them.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Google.
Yeah. So I mean, obviously, when you think of Google, you automatically think of search engine, which is still growing at 58%, which is just incredible. And a lot of that's driven by the fact that people are at home more. But the bigger thing is that they are expanding outside of that. And so they are the number three player in cloud, which rose 46% this last quarter. And then YouTube has been one of those segments that for a while people questioned whether it could actually be a viable business. But over the past year, it's shown that it can be. Monetization of it has grown tremendously. So revenue there is up 48%, 49%. And right now, you know, from a standpoint of valuation, it's trading at 19 times earnings, which makes it just about the cheapest tech game out
there. Yeah, one of favorite things to do in our family is go on set, you know, YouTube and watch the old Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, I mean,
it's awesome.
Possibilities are endless on YouTube. It's amazing.
Right? And it's a whole generation who has not seen Rosanna Dana, the Bassmaster.
Right.
All right. So digital payments, another big theme for us. And there's a couple companies that have been players in that, including Square. But the one that we've really invested in is PayPal.
Yeah. And I think we like PayPal. I mean, obviously, Square is a high growth company, but PayPal is a more stable growth name. The businesses are more solid footing. They have growth across all their segments. I mean, Venmo is obviously the largest growth driver in general from a transaction standpoint. So you're seeing that peer-to-peer transaction pick up as just in general a new generation is learning how to pay for things and how they pay for it, how they transition money. And then from a business standpoint, you know, Venmo is actually taking quite a bit of market share. So PayPal in general has 54% of the market share in digital payments. But when you look at digital payments are still a relatively small piece of the overall transaction across the globe. And so there is still quite a bit of cash payments out there as much as people don't know it. So when you look globally, there are plenty of opportunities. And then obviously we've got the crypto piece. And so, you know, there can be debates around the sustainability of that, but the advantage PayPal and Venmo has is that they're not really tied to any crypto. They're just there to do a transaction. And so the ability to move that and the transaction fees are actually higher, so profit margins are higher, So, you know, just another place that they can do business.
I'm going to throw one of the themes in the second half with the recovery is the health of the banking sector. And so there's several banks. The overriding theme is that with the opening of the economy, there'd be stronger loan growth. The consumer remains strong. And so one of the banks that we like is PNC Bank, and there's several to pick from, but this it's a large regional bank, so it doesn't really have the capital market footprint that a JP Morgan or a Citi has. But there's strong momentum behind the economic recovery. Loan demand is strong. The health of the loan portfolio, so they put up $3 billion of loan loss reserves. We expect that to fall in below a billion eventually. And so stock trades at 194 right now, which is about 10.1 times earnings, 1.25 times book value. On a book value basis, probably a little bit elevated, but the growth opportunities across its four segments, including the wealth management segment, look pretty strong. So that would be another stock. The theme I think we're going to see across the financial sector is stock buybacks. I think we're going to see one more push with low interest rates where banks just borrow into the marketplace and use proceeds to buy back stocks. So that would be one of our. And then we got a healthcare name you want to talk about?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think when you think of Pfizer, you're thinking of vaccines, and obviously that is going to be a short term. That's going to be a big boost. They just increased their revenue estimates from the vaccine from $15 billion to $26 billion. But you got to look beyond that. And really, when you peel back anything on the vaccine side, you still got revenue growth at 8%. You've got a great pipeline. Eliquis is continuing to grow at 25%. And the story here for me is really a valuation story. So trading at 11 times earnings makes it really, despite the fact that they've got a great vaccine, one of the cheapest names in healthcare. I mean, you got Johnson & Johnson trading at 16 times, Merck trading at 17 times. So at 11 times earnings, this is actually a cheap stock in the healthcare. So that's why we like it.
Yeah. And for those counting at home, I think that was six names. We're known for this, right?
Right.
Here's our top five. So any other thoughts, any closing thoughts? Well, it's going to be an interesting week. It's going to be an interesting summer too. So thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk you through the week.
Thanks.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.